This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, back again. Shady's back, tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, this quarterback draft class may not seem great, and maybe it isn't, but they have a few things going for them. We'll get to that. Plus, takeaways from the opening game of each second-round series in the NBA, and we don't do a whole lot of hockey around here. But the NHL playoffs have begun. I know we're going to sprinkle some of it into Trent's takes each day, and also, I know that after spending a few moments digging into this playoff field, I am now a hockey expert. So we're going to get to all the big takeaways of the hockey postseason. I have watched very few games this year, but I'm going to tell you all you need to know about the NHL playoffs, which began last night. Go Oilers. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can find the show podcast. You can also leave a comment for the show there at charlestonsportsradio.com on our show page, on Twitter at Morrow Middays, via text. Always text the show at 843-608-1734. Or also, you can always get to us on the phones, 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. As often happens, we get into some sort of sidebar throughout the afternoon. And today it's been about pies. Now, earlier we were talking about the millionaire pie. Michael has since followed up with the recipe. 3 graham cracker crusts, 2 large tubs of Cool Whip, 1 can of condensed milk, 3 lemons squeezed, 1 can crushed pineapple with juice drained, and then add crushed pecans or whatever nuts or cherries you prefer as desired. In Michael's case, or maybe this isn't his recipe, in the case of this recipe, they say they only add pecans. Do you go pecans or pecans? How do you say that?
That's tough. I feel like I switch it up every so often, depending on the environment that I'm in. Yeah. I feel like if I was just talking to you, Luke, I'd probably say pecans. Yeah. What do you say, pecans?
No, I think I always go pecans, I think.
I think it rolls off the tongue better than
absolutely.
We have some pecans.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The way you say, I think pecans is a little uppity. So it depends if you're in a certain crowd, right? Maybe you sound too common folk to say pecans. But I usually go pecan.
I'm surprised up there in Connecticut they didn't go.
That's true. Pecans. We got some bougie people. Probably do go pecans. I go pecans. We're simple people, us Moros. Thoroughly mix all contents. We're not done here. In a large bowl, spread generously in pie crusts and chill for a few hours in the fridge, and then prepare to dust one immediately after chill. I don't know what that means. Dust one? I've never made a pie before. Stick mine in the freezer to rapidly chill for consistency, but don't let it freeze. Every time they brought one to a church social, it didn't last long. I am now very intrigued. I hope the Edmonton Oilers last longer in the playoffs than the Penguins, so Trent can go buy me a millionaire's pie and we could try this thing. But I'm very intrigued by this pie. Hey, we started the afternoon talking about this. You know, so much focus is always put on the quarterbacks, and rightfully so. So as we still digest this year's draft and slowly move away from it, we look at this quarterback draft class, and it's perceived to, you know, it's interesting. It's perceived to not be that great, but maybe there is some value in this draft. When you get these guys later, you're not spending a first-round pick. Chances are the class probably won't be that great. That's why these guys all went as late as they did. But there could be one or two surprises. And as I always say, life is all about expectations. So in the case of these quarterbacks, there's a big difference if we're talking about Matt Corral in the third round and Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder compared to if they all went in the top 20. Then they would have higher expectations. Now we're talking about, man, this is the worst draft class in 25 years. Last year was much better. Next year is going to be much better. This year, don't expect anything from these guys. Even Kenny Pickett in the first round, right? He's not going to be great in Pittsburgh. Ritter's a project. Willis is a project. Don't expect much. That could be a benefit to these guys. I don't know how much we should expect from these quarterbacks. I think Matt Corral And Malik Willis and even Desmond Ridder are all intriguing. That's the word I would use. I think even Zappe to New England, I don't know if he has an opportunity with the Patriots because of Mac Jones. I think he's intriguing. I think Sam Howell at the Washington Commanders could be intriguing. He may be better than Carson Wentz for all I know. So intriguing is the word I'm using for this draft class. I don't know if these guys or any of them are going to pan out and be surprises. I don't know if they're all going to be busts, but I think there is a little potential here that you're talking third or fourth round picks. You didn't invest a lot in them, and who knows? Maybe in 2 years, they develop to be a really good quarterback. But I look back at the drafts in the past, and if you look at the number one pick taken each of the last couple of years, they're usually not the best players in the draft. And part of that is because you can get better value later on. But also part of it, I imagine, is also the pressure or the expectations or how we view these guys. That if these players weren't taken number one overall, we'd probably view them a little differently. Look at the number one picks. Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Myles Garrett, Jared Goff, Jameis Winston, Jadeveon Clowney. All good NFL players. Some of them really good. Joe Burrow, off to a great start. Kyler Murray has shown some flashes. Myles Garrett can be really good when he's out on the field. But you look at like a Jared Goff, if Goff wasn't a number one pick, we look at him a little different, right? If he was a second round draft pick and he got the Rams to a Super Bowl and now, you know, he plays decently in Detroit, you view him a little bit differently than, wow, right, number one pick, the Rams had to move on from him. Matt Stafford came in, won a Super Bowl afterwards. McVay had a bail on this guy. Now he's in Detroit, he's going to lose a bunch of games. When you're the number one pick, it puts a lot of expectations on you. Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick in Jacksonville, right? Good luck. He may have a lot of talent, but he's in a bad situation. He's been already determined to be the next, you know, John Elway, the next savior, generational talent. You better be. You got a lot of pressure on you and high expectations going to even a bad organization. I think Ja'Marr Chase was the best player of that draft class. Joe Burrow probably is or will be, but Justin Herbert isn't far behind. And Chase Young, when you want to talk about defensive players from that draft class, right? Chase Young is right up there too. When Kyler Murray was drafted, he has shown some flashes. Joey Bosa may have the better career. The year Baker Mayfield was drafted, Josh Allen is the better quarterback. Myles Garrett, when he was drafted, Patrick Mahomes is the best player from that draft class. When Jared Goff was drafted, probably the other Bosa. Joey Bosa went the year of Jared Goff, right? I'm mixing up my Bosas, or no, maybe not. Regardless, the two Bosa brothers are probably the best players of their draft classes. You also had Jalen Ramsey that year with Jared Goff. Jameis Winston, Amari Cooper from that draft class, probably the better first-round talent. And when Jadeveon Clowney was drafted, Khalil Mack probably was the better defensive player from that draft class. And again, part of it are the expectations. You move some of those guys later on in the draft, we may be viewing them differently. You wouldn't have as many busts, right, if guys were taken later on in the draft. But when you take the number one pick, the expectation is this is going to be the best guy in the draft. Problem is, it usually doesn't work out that way. Not just over the last 8 years, as I gave you, but even historically. Then, sometimes, you find a quarterback talent later in the draft that you have no expectations for, and they surprise you. That was Davis Mills last year. Third-round pick for the Texans. He was like the seventh quarterback taken. We focused so much on the five quarterbacks in the first round. Nobody knew about Davis Mills. He goes to Houston. He may have been the best of the rookie quarterbacks last year. I know Mac Jones got his team in the playoffs, but from an individual perspective, Davis Mills may have been the most impressive one for me in terms of how he looked. Russell Wilson was a third-round pick. Dak Prescott in the fourth. Kirk Cousins went in the fourth round. Gardner Minshew in the sixth. Taylor Heineke undrafted. Nick Foles in the third round. He was a Super Bowl MVP. Other guys in the league. You have Derek Carr and Jimmy Garoppolo were in the second round. Not much was expected, certainly, from a Jimmy Garoppolo. Back up in New England. Tom Brady's there. They trade him away. He's had a pretty good career. Drew Lock and Jalen Hurts are both starting quarterbacks. They were drafted outside of the top 40. Lamar Jackson was a fifth round, or I should say he was the fifth quarterback taken in his draft. Tom Brady, as we know, pick number 199. If you go further back, Matt Schaub in the third round, Kyle Orton in the fourth, Derek Anderson in the sixth, Matt Castle in the seventh, Ryan Fitzpatrick in the seventh, guys who were longtime starting quarterbacks. Derek Anderson went to a Pro Bowl. Kyle Orton went to a Super Bowl. Matt Schaub went to some Pro Bowls. Matt Castle made it to the playoffs as a starting quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick has been in the league for 20 years. So the main takeaways, number one, you can always find some good players later on in the draft. Just because a quarterback went in the third round or the fourth round doesn't mean they're not going to have a good career. And also, number two, expectations are kind of different. You don't hold Ryan Fitzpatrick to the same standards as a Baker Mayfield. Fitzpatrick played in the Ivy League and was drafted in the seventh round. Baker Mayfield was a Heisman winner who went first overall. A little bit different. And we always hold these guys to that draft class. I mean, Tom Brady has become the greatest quarterback of all time, and yet how often do people reference he was picked 199th? But it turns out we were just wrong. Everybody missed on Tom Brady. He was not the 199th best player in that draft class. He was certainly top 10. I'm not going to say number one because while he is the greatest quarterback of all time, I don't know if he's the most skilled. I'd have to go back and look at that draft class and see the most talented players at other positions. I don't remember from 20 years ago. But he's obviously had the best career of anybody in that draft class and certainly was not the 199th best player. I think back to Stephon Diggs going in the fifth round. He clearly was better than a fifth-round talent. Lamar Jackson was certainly better than the fifth quarterback taken in that draft class. So sometimes we're just kind of wrong. And I compared it to the preseason rankings in college football where you put a ranking on those guys or those teams in college football, and then that suddenly becomes how we look at them. Just because a bunch of writers believed UNC was like the 10th best team in the country last year, now suddenly, well, they're the 10th best team. Yeah, it turns out they weren't that good, but they're held to your standard. Same idea with these draft boards. People thought Malik Willis was going to be the number two pick, so now we look at Malik Willis going in the third round as some sort of disappointment. Well, that was just your opinion. Maybe he really is more of a third-round talent. And when you look at these guys now, the pressure is not on them like first-round quarterbacks. The expectations are lower, so the bar is set lower. You can accomplish less and still be viewed as an accomplishment or as a successful story. And also, they're not going to be thrusted in immediately. They're going to have some time to be on the sideline, to prepare, to get ready, to learn the playbook, to mature, right? Kind of like we've seen from years past with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, good quarterbacks over the years who did not start right away, and it worked out pretty well for them. Even an Eli Manning didn't start right away, won a couple of Super Bowls. Right, that could be important as well. So when I look at this quarterback draft class, it's intriguing. Is it going to be good? I have no idea. Maybe they are just not very good. That's why they went so late in the draft. But they do have some things going for them. Right, they'll have some time on the sidelines to get their feet wet. There'll be a lack of pressure. They'll actually have some patience, which you usually don't get afforded to you in the NFL or in any professional sport. And maybe some of these guys could turn into legitimate quarterbacks. The other thing going for them is that we always think of people from where they started. And when that guy rises through the company, it always ticks you off. Like, seriously? This guy's now my boss? I remember when he started in the mailroom. But he's no longer working in the mailroom. He has shown promise and has been successful and now has turned himself into the best leader in the company. Which takes me back to what I was saying about Tom Brady. He's the greatest quarterback of all time, but you still hear about, well, he was picked 199th. Yeah, but it was clear he was not the 199th best player in that draft. That was just a big miss. But we still hold you to that standard. Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield, you want to go back to like a Ryan Leaf, right? We always compare him to that number two or number one pick they were taking at. Mitch Trubisky as a number two pick. It was clear Trubisky was not the second best player in that draft class. The Bears got it wrong. But he's always going to be held to that standard because the Bears believed he was a second-round pick. So these quarterbacks, we're all going to look at them as, you know, third-, fourth-round talents. Kind of like a Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott, that if you go out there, if Matt Corral can become a starting quarterback for the Panthers and have a pretty good career, not necessarily an MVP or a Hall of Famer, but, you know, like, look at a Kirk Cousins, fourth-rounder, starting quarterback for the Washington football team, Minnesota, has gone to a couple of Pro Bowls, has gone to the playoffs a few times. There's a ceiling. He's not one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but he's been a starting quarterback for a decade. You get something out of that from a Corral, a Desmond Ridder, a Malik Willis, it looks even better because of where you took him in the third or fourth round. It's about the value of the picks. Last thing on this, we played this audio earlier. Let's re-rack Chris Sims because I do think it's a good breakdown. Chris Sims played the position in the NFL, and Chris Sims does a good job breaking down quarterbacks. A lot of his takes seem out there, but then you give it a little time and you say, actually, you know what? He was kind of right. And so when Chris Sims looked at this draft class, he thought Matt Corral was the best of these quarterbacks, the quarterback that wound up with the Carolina Panthers. Music to the ears of Panthers fans. Here was Sims' breakdown of why he likes Corral so much.
Insane athlete. He's the quickest quarterback in the draft. There's nobody with quicker feet, can make people miss, great acceleration, pop his feet to get back into throwing positions. Wait, I moved out of it. I made somebody miss. Oh, wait, I got to get it back into position to throw the ball 15 yards down the middle. Nobody can do that as quick as Matt Corral, let alone it's the quickest release in the draft, too. It's as quick a release as I've seen in coming out of college football in a few years,
really?
Actually. It's almost to the point at times where I'd go, man, I wish he'd let his arm go a little bit more at times. Hmm. It almost looks like it's like, you have to slow it down sometimes. You're almost like, how did he get it out that quick with that much power? And it didn't look like – it literally looked like he just took it from his ear and was like, threw it like a dart. I mean, that's how quick and compact the delivery is. Then we get into the arm strength. I mean, the arm strength is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. The ball absolutely flies out of Matt Corral's hands. To me, he's made for the modern-day NFL. Bootlegs on the move. Play action pass, you know, it's the deep post of the in cut and then make something happen and run. Oh, okay, this guy can run. I think Matt Corral is faster than all the other quarterbacks. He's the fastest quarterback of this group. Like I told you earlier, I think he beats Malik Willis in a race. Corral, he's the most accurate thrower in the draft too. He is. I don't know what his numbers are. I don't even really fucking care. I know when he sees a target, he can put the ball and the money into the tightest windows out of anybody in this draft. He can do sidearm. He can do both feet off the ground and still throw the ball with great power. He can get the ball out of his hands like Rodgers can on screens where you go, damn, I mean, he caught the ball, faked this to somebody, and kind of hopped out of the way and threw it all in the same motion and got it out there and did that. So all of that, to me, was top-notch. There's a lot of elite traits with Matt Corral. He's bigger than what I thought, and he's faster than what I thought. Now, the one thing is, he's got to put it all together. It's not all together there yet.
That was Sims breaking down Corral. Maybe the Panthers have something in this third-round quarterback. Maybe Ritter, Malik Willis, they turn into something. But the expectations are low. The pressure is low. The patience will be high. And maybe one of them could develop into something like a Dak Prescott, a Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins. One of those late-round or middle-round draft picks from the quarterback position that you don't expect much of. And then a decade later, they're still a starter in the NFL. Coming up, my main takeaway. We've seen the opening game in each of the first four rounds in the NBA playoffs, the four matchups in the second round. You can learn a lot from that first game. I'll let you know the big takeaway from all four series in the NBA playoffs, and we'll do it next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You want paradise. But someday
coming up, my biggest takeaway from the four playoff series in the NBA right now here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. We got into these matchups a little bit last hour as part of Trent's takes. Let's run through each of these four real quick. You can learn a lot from the first game of a series. Right, we all have our beliefs and what you expect, but then you see it play out in that first game, and you actually see things, you know, happen out on the floor, and you see how teams match up and what the problem's going to be. For Phoenix and Dallas, you know, yesterday I said if there was going to be an upset, I would give Dallas the best opportunity. Then after watching the game last night, I'm not so sure, because the Mavericks got all they could from Luka Doncic. He had 45 points. He had a double-double. He had almost a triple-double. He was fantastic. He outscored the rest of the starting five for the Mavericks. That's a problem for Dallas. Brunson was not great. No one else scored more than, I think it was it 19? Doncic didn't get a ton of help. And also, the Mavericks, defensively, they're just not a very good team. The Suns, meanwhile, are a really good defensive team, and that shows how good Luka Doncic is. He dropped almost 50 against one of the better defensive teams in the league. In fact, he became the youngest player with 45 points and 10 rebounds in a playoff game since Kobe 21 years ago. Unfortunately, it was in a losing effort. So my main takeaway here is Luka is the best player in this series, which is why I thought the Mavericks had a chance. But his supporting cast is so poor, he's not going to get enough help to try to win this series. Now, it's just one game. You don't want to overreact. Maybe the Mavericks will make things interesting. But I'm fearful that last night is what we're going to see moving forward. Doncic is going to be great, and he's just not going to get enough help from the other guys that they won't be able to keep up with Phoenix. Also in the West, you have Golden State and Memphis. My biggest takeaway from the first game of this series is just that Golden State has that experience. They have the pedigree. They have the championship culture around there. They know what it takes to win games this time of year. And while Memphis did a good job in fourth quarters against Minnesota, that's the Timberwolves. This is a whole other animal with Golden State. They've won a bunch of championships. And they still have Klay and Curry and Draymond and Steve Kerr. And Memphis is just so young. So that's the big concern there. I mean, Memphis, as we saw in Game 1, they can hang with Golden State, but coming down the stretch, can they make the big plays to try to turn some of these close games into big victories? I'm not so sure. Golden State, obviously, I trust a lot more. Memphis is the youngest team in the league. This is a tough spot for them. Second round of the playoffs, going up against Golden State of all teams. And the Warriors, just right now, they got a lot of guys that can step up and make plays with Jordan Poole's emergence here in the playoffs. In the East, Miami and Philadelphia. Miami won last night, and it wasn't all that close. Philadelphia's in big trouble without Joel Embiid. The earliest he can come back will be Game 3. By then, maybe it's too late. I mean, you'll be heading back home. You can try to even the series, but not great to start down 2-0. On the Heat side of things, Eric Spoelstra just, you know, deserves a lot of credit for the coach he is. And in his career, he's 12-2 in Game 1s at home in the playoffs. So his teams, they usually set the tone. They're ready to go. They win the first game of the series, especially at home. He doesn't give up that home court advantage, and they did it again last night. But the big story of this series is for Philadelphia, specifically James Harden. He's just not the same player. I don't know if he's old, if he's injured, if he's both. He's not the same player he was even just 2 years ago. And he's not a leader. We know that. He can't lead a team on his back to big wins. That was the problem. I think that's why he wanted to go to Brooklyn. And then when he was in Brooklyn this year, Kyrie was unvaccinated, Durant was hurt, it came back on Harden, and he said, you know what, I don't like this. Let me go team up with Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. Make it easier. There's a lot being made at the start of this postseason about Harden saying, I don't feel any pressure. And maybe that's true, or maybe it's just an athlete putting on a brave face, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is the truth. He probably doesn't feel a lot of pressure because I don't know if James Harden really cares. I don't know if he's ever shown that he cares. He's oftentimes overweight. He has made already through his contracts and his endorsement deals, I think he's got $750 million, I think it is. Something outrageous. Maybe not that much. That's way too much. But he's got a lot of money. Millions of dollars he's made already in his career. He's always played in great cities, right? He wants to go to Houston once he leaves OKC, once he had control of his career. Goes to Houston, cool spot. Goes to Brooklyn, now goes to Philadelphia. I don't know how much Harden truly does care about trying to win a championship. He's now gone 11 straight games under 25 points. Last night he was the third leading scorer. Can't happen. And he had the Sixers as a team, they averaged 12 fewer points per game without Joel Embiid on the floor. It's a big difference. Embiid's more important to this team than James Harden. And without Embiid, the Sixers are in big trouble. Now Trent tells me $300 million on his contracts as a player. And then I believe his endorsement deals are just as much, so that would put him at $600 million. So I guess I wasn't too far off. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of money. He has spent time in some cool cities. He goes to Philadelphia where Embiid's supposed to be the star, but now Embiid's not out there. I don't know how much James Harden has left in the tank, and I also don't know how much he cares about what's left in the tank either. And I would hate to, you know, call out somebody's fight, but from what I've seen from James, it's just like, all right, go play in Philadelphia. Make it easy on myself with Tobias Harris and Embiid and Maxey around. Make a lot more money. Spend some time in a cool city. Hopefully Embiid can lead us to a championship. He's not a leader. He can't lead you on his own. The Sixers are doomed until Joel Embiid gets back on the floor. And once he's back on the floor, who knows what he'll be like. He's coming off a concussion with a hand injury and a broken face. Not good for Philadelphia. And then lastly, Milwaukee and Boston. The Bucks won on Sunday. Giannis put together a triple-double, and they played great defense. And for Boston, the big takeaway of this series is that Boston, it's like, the famous line of, we're not in Kansas anymore. This is not the Brooklyn Nets that you're facing anymore. This is a real team in Milwaukee. And there are some good cut-ups that you can find online of Jason Tatum kind of getting manhandled by Giannis. And this is not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. This is a Milwaukee team that plays a lot harder, and they're more of a defensive team, and they're going to make you work, and they're going to be physical, and they're going to battle, and it's going to be a lot harder. Marcus Smart's now banged up. And so for the Celtics, you breeze through Brooklyn. This is going to be a tougher test. And the real test is the defense of Milwaukee. What a job they did in game one, led by Giannis. The Celtics shot more threes than they ever have in a playoff game, and they made their second fewest twos they ever had in a playoff game. They made 10 two-pointers. They shot, was it, 50 threes? Because the Bucks' defense was keeping them from getting in the lane. They had to try to shoot it from outside. And as the old saying goes, you don't live and die by the three, you only die by it. So the Celtics had to try to live by the three-pointer on Sunday. It led to their death instead. This will be a very interesting series. And I don't want to put it all on just game one, what we saw Sunday. But based off of game one, looked like a pretty good matchup for Milwaukee and what they can do defensively and wall off, you know, the lane for Boston and force them to play outside. And then on the flip side, especially with Marcus Smart banged up, this is a much tougher matchup, of course, for Boston than Brooklyn was. That was like child play. Now you're dealing with the men, with the adults in terms of Giannis. And he went off for his second playoff triple-double on Sunday. That should be an intriguing series. Here is Tim Legler on ESPN's Get Up this morning talking about the NBA playoffs and why he thinks it's still the Suns. As the number one team in the league this year, they're still the number one team now.
The only two things that could stand in the way, and it does feel like Phoenix's year, I agree with Jay, it does feel that way, are the greatness of the Warriors,
yep,
the greatness of Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, to answer your question, that's the only two things, because they're going to win this series. Mm-hmm. I do think Dallas has a chance to get a couple of games, maybe one game, maybe two. Phoenix will win this series. Phoenix, Golden State, I just said I think Golden State's going to the finals. I mean, that's a great team that now has a guy, to me, the emergence of Jordan Poole, what he has done to the Warriors. You think about it. Andrew Wiggins made the All-Star team this year. There are nights right now that Andrew Wiggins is their fifth best player, mm-hmm, because of the way Jordan Poole's playing. Think about that. That's how deep they are right now with talent. Could Phoenix beat them? Of course they could beat them. They're the number one seed. Obviously, they've been the best team in the league. So I'm not going to be shocked whichever way that goes, whichever one of those teams get to the finals. Mm-hmm. But for me, what's it going to take? It's going to take Giannis Antetokounmpo being incredibly special in the NBA Finals, or it's going to take Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Wiggins, and then Jordan Poole, who's now scoring at an elite level. It's going to take something like that, because Phoenix is a complete team across the board.
Legler still riding the Phoenix Suns train. Those were my takeaways from each of the first series or first games of the series in the NBA playoffs. You know, during that sound clip, Trent brought up a good point of comparing James Harden to someone like a Conor McGregor, and it's what they always say in the boxing world or just the fighting world, you know, that it, along the lines, I've always botched the saying, but it's hard to get up at 6 a.m. and train when you're waking up in silk sheets, something along those lines, paraphrasing. You get the idea. It's hard to still keep that same fire or work ethic or the way you have to train to be a fighter when you're rolling in millions of dollars, when you don't really have to do it anymore. And for James Harden to have made over half a billion already, you know, some guys view the sport as a real passion, and some guys it really is kind of like a job. And I don't want to make assumptions about James Harden, but it just seems as if it's almost like more of the job. It's just a way to make a lot of money. That's his career. He's really good at it, you know, but he's been out of shape the last couple of years. Hasn't been nearly as good. And remember, when they lost, they blew that series to the Warriors. He was in the strip club that night. Now, everybody can get over tough times in a different way. And maybe that was his way to cope. But it just almost gives off the idea of, like, you don't really care. You went 0 for 27 from beyond the arc. You blew the series. And then that night, you know, you're living it up at the local strip club for people to see you. Can you take one night off? Can you kind of, like, mourn in silence that your team, the fans are all ticked off. They don't want to see you having a good time at the strip club. This always kind of gives off the idea of, like, doesn't really care. Makes his money. Go out there. Play basketball. Live in cool cities, and whatever happens, happens. But without Joel Embiid, the Sixers are not going anywhere. Coming up, that's the breakdown of the NBA playoffs. When we come back, we'll break down the NHL playoffs. It only took me a few moments to become an expert, let me tell you. And I'm going to tell you all you need to know about the NHL playoffs, which began last night. If you're a casual hockey fan and you're looking for a team to root for, you're wondering what are the big storylines, you're curious, you want to check out the Stanley Cup playoffs, I am here to help when we come back. The More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, everything you need to know about the NHL playoffs here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Playoffs began last night in the hockey world, and I decided to dive in and come up with all the little facts you need to know for this postseason. I am a playoff hockey watcher. I don't watch very much of the regular season at all. Maybe you don't care about the playoffs either. But if you're somebody who is interested in watching the NHL postseason this year, we are here to help. We have both picked a team. I'm on the Edmonton Oilers, who lost a tough one last night. Kings scored a third-period goal to win by one. And Trent's on the Penguins, who I believe begin their series tonight with the Rangers.
That's correct.
And after today's conversation, you know, we have to come up with some sort of payoff, and maybe that payoff is to get that one of those millionaire's pies, if those are able to be purchased somewhere. Otherwise, I certainly can't bake, so we'll have to come up with something else. But if you're curious, if you're trying to get into the NHL playoffs and you're wondering, what do I need to know? Don't worry. We are here to help. Here's everything you need to know. It took me a couple of hours to become a hockey expert. Here's all the things you need to know about the NHL postseason. Number one, what you need to know is this is the greatest hockey song of all time. Brass Bonanza, the goal song of the Hartford Whalers. And I hope the Carolina Hurricanes never use it. This was the highest scoring hockey season since 1996. More goals this year than any year since 96. So if you're into offense and the NHL has always been trying to improve or increase the number of goals, this year may be the year for you. Now, what I'm curious to see is if the offense continues in the playoffs. Or do we get more defensive now? Because season's on the line, guys will lay out. They'll be willing to step in front of a puck more now than a regular season, you know, early season game. This is also the first time that all eight teams from the East had over 100 points this year in the standings. The East is really good and deep. All eight teams had really good years. The Florida Panthers won the President's Trophy for the first time ever. That's awarded to the team with the best record in the regular season. However, the last eight teams to have the best record in the regular season all missed the Stanley Cup Finals. The last eight never reached the Finals. We'll see if the Panthers can break that stretch. The Tampa Bay Lightning are defending Stanley Cup champions. They're going for a three-peat this year. It would be the first time that has happened since the Islanders won four straight, ending in 1983. And I think the Lightning do have a better chance than most teams in that these last couple years, because of COVID, were unique seasons. And that could be an advantage. It could be an advantage or a disadvantage when you get off your schedule, right? It's kind of throwing some pitchers out of whack in baseball. But when it comes to a hockey team, maybe you're not as worn out. There are some longer pauses, some shortened seasons. You know, they were in that bubble, less travel. Maybe it's easier to try to three-peat than under normal circumstances. That's what the Lightning are trying to do this year. No Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup since 1993, which seems crazy. And when you look at this playoff field, teams missing their starting goalies. The Hurricanes, good. The Penguins and the Predators, at least for a period of time. Looking at different teams in the playoff field, some takeaways from some of these teams. The Florida Panthers, as mentioned, have the best record in the league, but they have not won a playoff series in 24 years. It's the longest active drought and the second longest drought all time. So something's got to give, you would think. The Rangers, aforementioned Rangers, are in the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. Their goalie led the league in fewest goals against this year, but he has only one playoff game in his career. The Rangers, for the longest time, right, had a historic goalie, and now have replaced him with a guy who's had a pretty good year, but very little playoff experience. And I don't try to pronounce any of these guys' names because they're a mouthful. The Edmonton Oilers, that's a team I jumped on their bandwagon. They had their most wins this year since 1987. They have two MVPs on the roster, two point leaders as well, and also zero playoff series victories for those two guys, led by Connor McDavid. The Oilers, they're compared to McDavid, at least, is compared to Mike Trout for you baseball fans. If you're looking for some sort of point of reference, right? Trout has never won a playoff game. One of the best players in the sport has never won a game. McDavid has had a great career with Edmonton. They've never won a series. Maybe this year that changes, although they lost last night. The St. Louis Blues had nine guys this year score at least 20 goals, the most for a team since the Red Wings in 2006. So the Blues have one of the most potent offenses, but they're facing the goalie of the year from last season for the Minnesota Wild. However, the Blues did win 4-0 last night, so the offense won out. And the Wild, kind of like the Panthers, the Oilers, set a record for most wins this year. There are a lot of teams this year that had historic seasons in the NHL. And lastly, the Maple Leafs. They, too, set a record for most wins in franchise history this year. But they also haven't won a playoff series since 2004. And they're facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who has already mentioned they are trying to win their third straight Stanley Cup. So the Maple Leafs have a tough draw in the first round. Interesting storylines in the first round of the NHL playoffs. And there you go. All you need to know to get set for the Stanley Cup playoffs that began last night. I sat down last night. I looked up these teams, crunched some numbers, and in about 5 minutes, I'm the new Barry Melrose. Let me tell you. I know all you need to know about the NHL. Playoffs began last night. Maybe you'll be tuned in. Let's go Edmonton Oilers. Now, there's still one piece of business that we need to take care of today. Yesterday, apparently, is the birthday of a P1 listener of this show and this station, Sam. Happy belated birthday to Sam. I did not know yesterday was his birthday.
Shares a birthday with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. You know who you got? Anybody good on your birthday? Who do you share a birthday with?
Ooh, no, I've never looked that up. I would be curious to know the famous birthdays, because what, there's that website where you just see all the celebrities' birthdays. Billy Joel. I mean, there you go.
Really?
You know, Billy Joel and I just good buddies.
That's a good one.
Rosario Dawson.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, not too many that jump out. Luke, how about yourself, sir?
Yeah, there were some baseball players. I'm trying to CC Sabathia.
Mm.
And I think Nomar was a day after mine. And growing up as a Red Sox fan, that was, like, good enough.
Okay.
We had birthdays after. I'm looking at the list now. Nobody really stands out on my day.
Oh, Ghostface Killer? You kidding me? Throw him in there. Lane Kiffin and I share the same birthday.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. Yeah, I'm looking at my list. I don't really have anybody that great. Brandi Chastain, who had the big goal and then, like, ripped her top off. That's decent. Oh, John Lovitz. Love John Lovitz.
There you go.
Dave Henderson, the baseball player. That's pretty good. Hit a big home run in 1986. Howie Epstein from my favorite band, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. He was the bass player. All right, maybe my birthday's not so bad. Oh, how about this one? Robin Williams.
Oh, there you go.
My birthday.
Rest in peace.
And Cat Stevens, who's not allowed in the country anymore. Anyways, so on and so forth. So yesterday was Sam's birthday. I had no idea that this happened, but I'm told that you and Bobby sang him happy birthday on the air yesterday.
We did, yeah. I was doing the singing, and Bobby was doing a little in between as well, and it was kind of spur of the moment. We didn't know. I was trying to find a birthday song for Sam when he called in, but I couldn't find one that was appropriate for the airwaves. So last minute, Bobby just pointed to me, and we started singing, and it became a pretty cool thing.
All right. Now, I have not heard this. I've intentionally refrained. I wanted to hear it for the first time on air. We're going to play it for you. Many don't know, but before Trent got involved here at ESPN Radio, he's part of a boy band called the Bare Bottom Boys. And now he's singing happy birthday to Sam over the radio. So let's hear from yesterday. In case you missed it from Fan Talk, we'll play it again to wish, since I did not know yesterday, I couldn't wish Sam a happy birthday. We're going to use this to wish him a happy birthday. Here's how it sounded, the beautiful tones from Fan Talk yesterday.
Happy birthday to you. Psh. Happy birthday to you. Psh. Happy birthday, dear Samuel. Psh. Happy birthday to you. Psh. Happy birthday, Sam.
That was pretty good.
As if he was surprised. Right, Sam said that was pretty good, as if he was expecting something terrible.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. You nailed that.
Yeah, I started off a little flat, but, you know, it's all good. It's all good.
That was good. Got a nice voice. The Bare Bottom. It's too bad the Bare Bottom Boys broke up.
Yeah, we did. You know, 2016 was a rough year for us. It was like One Direction splitting up. Mm-hmm. You know, we just all tried to go our separate ways and move on. But I missed the guys.
Yeah, I can imagine. I love that Sam called out Bobby, though, during that.
Because Bobby wasn't singing. Yeah. He said he was going like this in the air doing the cymbals. Uh-huh. And he was doing the noise. Oh, it was
That's
hilarious.
What that was. And he said, come on, Bobby. Yeah, get in there. Now, I've heard Bobby sing on air before. He lost a bet a couple years ago and had to sing a fight song. I don't remember what fight song it was. Whatever the bet was, The Other Side.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I've heard him sing on the air before. And I guess it was a great service for all of us that it wasn't his voice yesterday. Instead, Trent carried the tune. Don't expect birthday songs to be sung for everybody. But I heard that they sang Happy Birthday to Sam on the air yesterday, so I had to hear it. So we re-racked it and played it, and that was pretty good. I'm impressed. I'm impressed by the skills of our producer here on the Morning Midday Show. And hope next time Bobby will join in. Happy belated birthday to Sam, one of our P1 listeners. By the way, Bobby's going to be out at Joe Riley Park this afternoon for Fan Talk as the Charleston River Dogs. They're at home this week. They play tonight, but they're doing a really great thing tonight where they are going to have, you probably saw the story, the kids in North Charleston that were playing just Little League baseball when a shooting took place in the parking lot there. And I believe they thought it was gang-related, and the kids were trying to play Little League, and there's a video out there that made the rounds, and you probably saw it on the news, and the kids had to duck on the baseball field, and everyone had to make sure they were safe and unharmed. And I guess there was also a softball practice going on. So the River Dogs are doing a great thing, and they're having those kids come out and play on the field tonight before the River Dogs game. And I believe the softball players will be out there as well. And so I think it's cool that Fan Talk's going to be involved. So Bobby's going to be out there. And, Trent, you're going to be out there, right, in person?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to leave around 4:30. Terry's going to come take over the producing side of things, and I'm going to head over to the Joe, and we're going to give a good play-by-play in color of what's going on the field for the youngsters. So cool for them to get to experience this after an incredibly traumatic event. I'm sure they'll live. These memories will live on forever with them. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great thing for the River Dogs to do something like this to try to make up for that, I'm sure, terrifying ordeal on the baseball field about a week or two ago. So that's coming up on Fan Talk later on. You know, yesterday I was talking about the story about the 5-year-old Edmonton Oiler fan who has brain cancer, and it's the reason why I've jumped on the Oilers bandwagon. But it's really sad when you see these, I guess like a paradox, where you see this poor kid in every photo or video, he's always got his little Mickey Mouse doll, and it's adorable. But you also realize, you know, the kid's going through cancer treatment at 5 years old for brain cancer. It's terrible. And it's that paradox that you see somebody that the reminder of a 5-year-old with his Mickey, and then unfortunately the difficulties he has to go through. And so I bring that up and relate it to this whole story because same idea. You have these kids that are just playing Little League baseball. And I'm sure we all remember what that was like growing up. Even if you weren't much of a baseball, everyone plays Little League baseball, and you're out there on the field, and I can only imagine what it would be like when you hear gunshots in the parking lot, and you got kids out there that are now in a dangerous spot. Oh, could be in the line of fire, and fortunately, it could really have turned into a real tragedy. Instead, it's just a bit of a scarring incident. But it's terrible. You see these kids, they're just supposed to be out there playing baseball, America's favorite pastime, having fun, throwing the ball around, and instead this is what they have to deal with. So it's one of those sobering things, one of those paradoxes that you have these kids that are just supposed to be worrying about, you know, having fun playing baseball, and instead a shooting breaks out, and now everybody's scrambling, and the parents, I mean, the coaches there, I'm sure, I can only imagine, are freaking out, and rightfully so, and it's just a terrible thing. You show up to your Little League baseball game not expecting something like that to happen. Fortunately, you know, we avoided a complete disaster, but it was still a terrible thing, and so it's great that the River Dogs will be doing something to try to make it up for those kids. And it's also why I hope the Edmonton Oilers go all the way for my buddy, my internet friend that I've been following from afar, who's dealing with cancer, 5-year-old fan. By the way, to try to make an impossible transition now, we played that happy birthday song. You have mentioned before on air that you've worked before as a waiter, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you used to have to do the silly, you know, sing happy birthday for people at the tables?
No, luckily, you know, out at the resort, there wasn't too many of that. I have had to go in the back and make some, you know, concoctions where somebody's like, it's my 50th birthday and we don't have cakes or anything out at the resort. So, you know, I'd like cut up a burger in 50 or whatever and bring it out there. No, I've never sang happy birthday. I would, you know, I had a every Monday, I would join Travis Allison around 9:30 at night out at the Grand Pavilion and sing Wagon Wheel with him. That was the thing. So, yeah, the patrons of the resort where I was working at did get to hear the voice every once in a while.
How about that? We're going to have Darius Rucker on the show and do a little duet.
He opened. Travis Allison used to open for Darius Rucker. That was the whole connect.
How about that? Nice. That was always the worst, right, when people would sing happy birthday in the restaurant, though? And it got to the point where it no longer became like a cool thing. It was the embarrassing thing. You go out with your buddies, and they would tell the waiter, like, hey, it's his birthday. And you'd be so embarrassed when they bring over. It's a free dessert. It used to be. Now they're going to charge you, just like that place charging for bread last week that I went to. Now they charge you, right, because you had too many people coming into these restaurants and just make your birthday. You told me it was your birthday last week. How many birthdays do you have, right? Everybody would just get the free dessert. It'd be so embarrassing when the wait staff would come over and sing happy birthday to you at the table.
And the tables around you kind of like feel obligated to sing too. They don't know the name though, so they're like, happy birthday, dear. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, especially when you're at the restaurants that have like their own unique style of singing it. And then like you got people like that are clapping and it's a whole thing. Anyways, happy birthday to Sam. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour two. Nope, wrapping up your Tuesday of the Morrow Midday Show. It's been a long day. I had to go run laps an hour ago. I'm all out of sorts. Wrapping up your Tuesday on the Morrow Midday Show. Hour three on a Tuesday afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and you can find the podcast there. While there, you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can find the show. You can listen to the show live or on demand through the app, ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 states and multiple countries throughout the afternoon. Sam has reached out asking when Bobby's going to be at Riley Park. He's out there right now. Fan talk coming up in just a few moments from Joe Riley Park this afternoon with that cool event that the River Dogs are doing before their game tonight. They're going to have the kids involved in that scary incident in North Charleston flying out in the field tonight for a doubleheader. And you can hear it all right here on Fan Talk coming up in just a few moments. So all pretty cool. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.